The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Tonight on Veritas, our special guest is Christopher Dunn, a visionary engineer whose groundbreaking research has transformed our understanding of ancient technologies. It's been 9 years since Christopher last joined us, and in that time, he has continued to captivate the world with his revolutionary theory that the Great Pyramid of Giza was not merely a tomb, but an advanced energy harvesting machine designed with a sophistication that challenges our modern understanding. In his latest book, Giza, The Tesla Connection, Christopher uncovers a remarkable link between the genius of Nikola Tesla and the ancient Egyptians, suggesting that these ancient builders may have mastered principles of energy generation far beyond their time. In this compelling work, Christopher presents evidence that the Great Pyramid was engineered to harness the natural energies of the Earth, using the science of acoustics and seismic forces in ways that predate modern civilization by centuries. Picture a world where the secrets of clean, sustainable energy have been hidden within the stones of Giza for thousands of years, awaiting rediscovery. Tonight, we'll explore these groundbreaking concepts, diving deep into the profound connection between ancient wisdom and modern science. We'll uncover the astonishing possibilities that arise when we consider what these ancient technologies could mean for our present and future. Could the answers to our energy challenges lie in the forgotten knowledge of a civilization long past? Christopher Dunn is coming up next. Christopher Dunn is coming up next.
Welcome to the Veritas Project. I'm your host, Mel Hostelrich. If this is your first time listening, welcome home. To access tonight's full interview and all of our exclusive material, simply join the Veritas Plus family by clicking on the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the power of FLFE with a 15-day free trial today. No credit card required. If you're looking to get in touch with me, have a guest suggestion, or would like to provide feedback, simply click on the contact button on our website. Your thoughts and ideas are always appreciated. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's program. His website is gizapower.com. The latest book is titled Giza, The Tesla Connection, Acoustical Science and the Harvesting of Clean Energy. And directly from the state of Illinois, I'd like to welcome Christopher Dunn. Hello, Christopher, and welcome back to Veritas. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Mel. I appreciate the invitation.
It's a pleasure, and it's been exactly 9 years since I had you on, and I'm glad you're back, because I know that in the past few weeks we had to reschedule, but you're here, you're back.
Yeah.
So it's been nearly a decade again. Tell me what has been the improvement, if you will. Have you gotten closer to the truth about the pyramids and also the Tesla connection?
Well, I think, you know, when you are seeking the truth, you want to have as large a data set as possible. So, you know, whether you're closer to the truth, I think, at any given time, I don't know. The thing is that with a model where you are collecting data and you have to analyze the data, any new data that comes in, if it doesn't quite fit what you'd originally speculated, then you have, if you can't accommodate it within any theory or hypothesis that you have formed, then you must reject your work. You must admit it and say, okay, this doesn't fit, so I'm going to pack up and go home. But there's been a lot of data that has been uncovered since the writing of the Giza Power Plant. And even my second book, Lost Technologies of Ancient Egypt, there's been quite a bit of data that has been discovered since that. And it all seems to find a place within the framework if you take it right down to, you know, the fundamental thinking or the thought, the fundamental thought that there was an advanced civilization in prehistory that were very sophisticated and created artifacts that are would be a challenge for even our advanced civilization, then, you know, essentially what has been uncovered since I started writing the book and publishing on the ideas, what has been uncovered has supported it. So now, of course, as far as the truth goes, you know, there's new information that comes forward in certain periods, at certain periods. One of them is like the a change in my thinking on the operation of the Great Pyramid as a power plant or electron harvester. And the new information that had been discovered since I wrote the Giza Power Plant actually enhances the theory, but it sends me into a different direction. So I would say, you know, whatever stage that you ask somebody, are you closer to the truth? If you would have asked me that after my first book was published, I would have probably been more confident and said, yeah, I think I'm fairly on the right track here. And I think in some areas I was, but in this particular area, I was led astray, not by somebody intentionally coming in my life and saying, you know, well, you need to do this, you need to believe this, or you need to follow this person or that person. Not that kind of leading astray, but actually relying on what had been written with respect to the Aswan granite that you find inside the Great Pyramid. And, you know, I was writing in my first book about that being a large part of the generation of energy within the Great Pyramid, and the component actually fed into that or supported that was the existence or the ability for silicon quartz crystal to release electrons if it's put under pressure. They call it the piezoelectric effect. So it was that physics with silicon quartz crystal, where, you know, if the crystal is stressed along a particular axis, then it will emit electrons. Well, as it turns out, what I learned since then was that, well, there wasn't that much silicon quartz crystal in the granite after all. What I had read in the literature was that it was 55% of the constituents of the rock. And as it turns out, I'm going to Egypt with a professional geologist, who studied the Aswan quarry and the granite, and he claimed that probably less than 20% of the granite was silicon quartz crystal. And so there was that part of it. The other part of it was a criticism or a bit of information that came to me where that pointed out that the silicon quartz crystals in the granite would be oriented in randomly, so it wouldn't be necessarily it had to be in a particular orientation for piezoelectricity to take effect, Whereas in granite, the silicon quartz crystal is randomly orientated. So not all silicon quartz crystal is going to be affected in that way. So that was something that I took on board, and basically it came to the tour that I did in 2018, and then another one in 2019, when I began to learn about the work of Friedemann Freund, who was a NASA physicist, and he had done research on the on earthquake lights. And so his work and his conclusions were that deep in the earth, in the lithosphere, in the igneous rock, when there is pressure put on the rock, and basically this is what happens prior to an earthquake, where the plates will build up pressure until there is a sudden release, and that's what happens. That's when the earthquake occurs with the ground movement. But before then, the rocks are pressing against each other. But what is happening before then, along with that buildup of pressure, is the emission of electrons from the lithosphere, from the igneous rock. And so these electrons are caused by what he calls a peroxy defects in the minerals in the igneous rock. And it doesn't necessarily, it could be granite or basalt, diorite, gabbro, gabbro, does not have any silicon quartz crystal, yet it is a more efficient producer of electrons under pressure than granite is. So it's a very interesting process. So Friedemann Freund is a NASA physicist, and he's written several papers, he's got quite a few papers, and he's got a few YouTube videos out there that I think are excellent. One of his one of his better videos that I've seen is one lecture that he gave in Christchurch, New Zealand. It was a TEDx talk. So if you and your listeners could tune into that, I think they would find it very informative and interesting. And he's a very nice fellow. I've met him. He has an office at the SETI Institute out in San Jose. So his work actually gave me the answer to the whole problem, but it opened up the entire scope of what this system could do. And that's what that's why I updated the Giza power plant and wrote the sequel, was because this information I thought was very important. And as you know, we are faced with potential energy issues in terms of, creating electricity, increasing our use of electricity. So it seemed like it was a fit for the times, if you will.
I had to ask you a few questions that I'm not an expert. I don't claim to be, but I'm a very observant person. In traveling the world, one thing I've noticed about the ancient, let's call it technology, architecture, one thing I've noticed is that they built with all these rocks and stones hardened with time. And we can see that in Pumapunku, we can see it in Egypt and so many other places, even in some buildings throughout Europe. My question is, if they did that and the pyramids were built to last forever, if you will, do you think there was a time in our history where somebody or some groups decided, nope, we can't have this for this plane we call Earth because of free energy, because of the whatever reason, health, you name it. There's so many reasons why they could have done that. Do you think they disconnected or turned it off in a way?
No, I don't think so. I think the eventually it did turn off, obviously, and a lot of the practices that they had, such as the ability to manipulate matter to lift these 1,000-ton blocks of granite and limestone and build them into structures, raising them up into, you know, elevating them to great heights. It's like, you know, it's, we don't build that way these days. Yeah, we cut the rock into smaller pieces and make the it's more manageable for us. So the question is why would they do that? And I mean, there's a simple answer if you look at it. It's like, well, if you have a means and it, you know, if it's easy for you to lift, maneuver, transport, whatever, a 500-ton piece of stone, if it's as easy to do that as it is to, you know, carry a hod of bricks up a ladder, then you're going to do it. Because if you would take that piece of limestone that's 500 tons and you cut it up into manageable smaller elements, then you would be creating more work for yourself. So I think I strongly believe that they had figured out how to manipulate matter within the gravitational field, within the Earth's gravitational field, and the stones were not as heavy, and they were able to maneuver them quite easily. Of course, do I have any evidence to prove that? No, I mean, it's just, it's kind of like instinctual or intuitive belief. It is supported by evidence, I suppose, if you consider logically and practically and look at what they were able to accomplish. It's almost like, you know, when you look at those UAPs that were filmed by these Navy jet fighters and they're dancing before them, defying gravity and moving at tremendous speeds. It gives us an indication that we're at a certain point in our technological development and we're on a path and we're improving it. Some people may think not, but I mean, in terms of physical improvements to our technologies, they have been slowly progressing over the last couple of hundred years. And they will continue to progress in the future. And so I have hopes that eventually, you know, the next generation or the generation after, that they will be able to master the gravitational forces of the Earth, and things will become a lot easier.
I remember in school, and I'm sure that this is still happening today, where in history they teach you that the pyramids were a tomb for the pharaohs. That's what we hear all the time. So yeah. What specific, and I ask you this because I've talked to so many researchers who have gone inside and it's pitch black, and they've told me there's no soot, there's nothing there showing that they used torches in order to go inside. So right. If that's the question, what kind of technology did they use to light the place when they were building it? So what specific architectural features the pyramid most strongly support the theory that it was built for, you know, to harness energy rather than to serve as a tomb?
Well, when I first started to study the Great Pyramid, and I was reading other people's works and the comments of different researchers, engineers, scientists who had commented on it, given their observations. There was a book that I was reading. It was called Secrets of the Great Pyramid by Peter Tompkins. And the scientists and engineers that he cited in his book, they all seemed to have an opinion that there was more to the Great Pyramid than most people.
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasproject.com. To listen to the rest and access all of our exclusive material, head over to the Veritas Plus member section or click the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the benefits with a 15-day free trial of FLFE today. No credit card required. If you'd like to get in touch with me, be a guest on the program, have a guest suggestion, or want to provide feedback, just click the contact button on our website at veritasproject.com. Thank you for listening to The Veritas Project, because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at veritasproject.com.